Chapter 20. Sidene.
Rand kept them moving through the night, allowing only a brief stop at dawn to rest the horses, and to allow Loyal rest. With the Horn of Valir and its gold and silver chest occupying his saddle, the Ogier walked or trotted ahead of his big horse, never complaining, never slowing them. Sometime during the night, they had crossed the border of Cairhien.
"I want to see it again," Celine said as they halted.
She dismounted and strode to Loyal's horse. Their shadows, long and thin, pointed west from the sun just peeking over the horizon.
"Bring it down for me, Alantin."
Loyal began to undo the straps.
"The Horn of Valir."
"No," Rand said, climbing down from Red's back. "Loyal, no." The Ogier looked from Rand to Celine, his ears twitching doubtfully, but he took his hands away.
"I want to see the horn," Celine demanded.
Rand was sure she was no older than he, but at that moment she suddenly seemed as old and as cold as the mountains, and more regal than Queen Morgay's at her haughtiest.
"I think we should keep the dagger shielded," Rand said. "For all I know, looking at it may be as bad as touching it. Let it stay where it is until I can put it in Matt's hands. He can take it to the Aes Sedai."
"And what price will they demand for that healing?"
"But he hasn't any choice."
He felt a little guilty over feeling relief that he, at least, was through with Aes Sedai.
"I am done with them, one way or another."
"The dagger. All you seem to care about is that dagger. I told you to be rid of it. The Horn of Valir, and..."
"No." She came to him, a sway in her walk that made him feel as if he had something caught in his throat.
"All I want is to see it in the light of day. I won't even touch it. You hold it. It would be something for me to remember, you holding the Horn of Valir in your hands."
She took his hands as she said it. Her touch made his skin tingle and his mouth go dry.
Something to remember when she had gone.
He could close the dagger up again as soon as the horn was out of the chest. It would be something to hold the horn in his hands where he could see it in the light. He wished he knew more of the prophecies of the dragon. The one time he had heard a merchant's guard telling a part of it, back in Emmons Field, Nynaeve had broken a broom across the man's shoulders. None of the little he had heard mentioned the Horn of Valir.
"Aes Sedai, trying to make me do what they want."
Celine was still gazing intently into his eyes, her face so young and beautiful that he wanted to kiss her despite what he was thinking. He had never seen an Aes Sedai act the way she did, and she looked young, not ageless.
"A girl my age couldn't be Aes Sedai, but..."
"Celine," he said softly,
"are you an Aes Sedai?"
"Aes Sedai?" She almost spat, flinging his hands away.
"Aes Sedai? Always you hurl that at me."
She took a deep breath and smoothed her dress, as if gathering herself.
"I am what and who I am, and I am no Aes Sedai."
And she wrapped herself in a silent coldness that made even the morning sun seem chill. Loyal and Huron bore it all with as good a grace as they could manage, trying to make conversation and hiding their embarrassment when she froze them with a look. They rode on. By the time they made camp that night beside a mountain stream that provided fish for their supper, Celine seemed to have regained some of her temper, chatting with the Ogier about books, speaking kindly to Huron. She barely spoke to Rand, though, unless he spoke first, either that evening or the following day as they rode through mountains that reared on either side of them like huge, jagged gray walls, ever climbing. But whenever he looked at her, she was watching him and smiling. Sometimes it was the sort of smile that made him smile back, sometimes the sort that made him clear his throat and blush at his own thoughts, and sometimes the mysterious, knowing smile that Egwene sometimes wore. It was a kind of smile that always put his back up, but at least it was a smile.
"She can't be Aes Sedai."
The way began to slope downwards, and with the promise of twilight in the air, Kinslayer's dagger at last gave way to hills, rolling and round, with more brush than trees, more thickets than forest. There was no road, just a dirt track, such as might be used by a few carts now and again. Fields carved some of the hills into terraces, fields full of crops but empty of people at this hour. None of the scattered farm buildings lay close enough to the path they rode for Rand to make out more than that they were all made of stone. When he saw the village ahead, lights already twinkled in a few windows against the coming of night.
"We'll sleep in beds tonight," he said. "That I will enjoy, Lord Rand," Huron laughed.
Loyal nodded agreement.
"A village inn?" Celine sniffed. "Dirty, no doubt, and full of unwashed men swilling ale. Why can't we sleep under the stars again? I find I enjoy sleeping under the stars."
"You would not enjoy it if Fane caught up with us while we slept," Rand said. "Him and those Trollocs. He's coming after me, Celine. After the horn, too, but it is me he can find. Why do you think I've kept such a close watch these past nights?"
"If Fane catches us, you will deal with him."
Her voice was coolly confident.
"And there could be dark friends in the village, too."
"But even if they know who we are, they can't do much with the rest of the villagers around. Not unless you think everyone in the village is a dark friend."
"And if they discover you carry the horn? Whether you want greatness or not, even farmers dream of it."
"She is right, Rand," Loyal said. "I fear even farmers might want to take it."
"Unroll your blanket, Loyal, and throw it over the chest. Keep it covered." Loyal complied, and Rand nodded. It was obvious there was a box or chest beneath the Ogier's striped blanket, but nothing suggested it was more than a travel chest. "My lady's chest of clothes," Rand said with a grin and a bow. Celine met his sally with silence and an unreadable look. After a moment, they started on again. Almost immediately, off to Rand's left, a glimmer from the setting sun reflected from something on the ground. Something large. Something very large by the light it threw up. Curious, he turned his horse that way.
"My lord," Huron said, "the village?"
"I just want to see this first," Rand said.
"It's brighter than sunlight on water. What can it be?"
His eyes on the reflection, he was surprised when Red suddenly stopped. On the point of urging the bay on, he realized that they stood on the edge of a clay precipice, above a huge excavation. Most of the hill had been dug away to a depth of easily 100 paces. Certainly more than one hill had vanished, and maybe some farmers' fields, for the hole was at least 10 times as wide as it was deep. The far side appeared to have been packed hard to a ramp. There were men on the bottom, a dozen of them, getting a fire started. Down there, night was already descending. Here and there among them, armor turned the light, and swords swung at their sides. He hardly glanced at them. Out of the clay at the bottom of the pit slanted a gigantic stone hand holding a crystal sphere, and it was this that shone with the last sunlight. Rand gaped at the size of it, a smooth ball. He was sure not so much as a scratch marred its surface, at least 20 paces through. Some distance away from the hand, a stone face in proportion had been uncovered. A bearded man's face, it thrust out of the soil with the dignity of vast years. The broad features seemed to hold wisdom and knowledge. Unsummoned, the void formed, whole and complete in an instant. Sidene glowing, beckoning. So intent was he on the face and the hand that he did not realize what had happened. He had once heard a ship captain speak of a giant hand holding a huge crystal sphere. Bale Doman had claimed it stuck out of a hill on the island of Tremulking.
"This is dangerous," Celine said. "Come away, Rand."
"I believe I can find a way down there," he said absently. Sidene sang to him. The huge ball seemed to glow white with the light of the sinking sun. It seemed to him that in the depths of the crystal, light swirled and danced in time to the song of Sidene. He wondered why the men below did not appear to notice. Celine rode close and took hold of his arm.
"Please, Rand, you must come away."
He looked at her hand, puzzled, then followed her arm up to her face. She seemed genuinely worried, perhaps even afraid.
"If this bank doesn't give way beneath our horses and break our necks with the fall, those men are guards, and no one puts guards on something they wish every passerby to examine. What good will it do to avoid Fane if some lord's guards arrest you? Come away."
Suddenly, a drifting, distant thought, he realized that the void surrounded him. Sidene sang, and the sphere pulsed, Even without looking, he could feel it. And the thought came that if he sang the song Sidene sang, that huge stone face would open its mouth and sing with him. With him and with Sidene, all one.
"Please, Rand," Selene said. "I will go to the village with you. I won't mention the horn again. Only come away."
He released the void, and it did not go. Sidene crooned, and the light in the sphere beat like a heart. Like his heart. Loyal, Huron, Selene, they all stared at him, but they seemed oblivious to the glorious blaze from the crystal. He tried to push the void away. It held like granite. He floated in an emptiness as hard as stone. The song of Sidene, the song of the sphere. He could feel them quivering along his bones. Grimly, he refused to give in, reached deep inside himself. "I will not."
"Rand."
He did not know whose voice it was. Reached for the core of who he was, the core of what he was.
"Will not."
"Rand."
The song filled him, filled the emptiness. Touched stone, hot from a pitiless sun, cold from a merciless night.
"Not."
Light filled him, blinded him.
"Till shade is gone," he mumbled. "Till water is gone."
Power filled him. He was one with the sphere.
"Into the shadow with teeth bared."
The power was his. The power was his. "To spit in sight blinder's eye." Power to break the world. "On the last day." It came out as a shout, and the void was gone. Red shied at his cry. Clay crumbled under the stallion's hoof, spilling into the pit. The big bay went to his knees. Rand leaned forward, gathering the reins, and Red scrambled to safety away from the edge. They were all staring at him, he saw. Selene, Loyal, Huron, all of them.
"What happened?" "The void."
He touched his forehead. The void had not gone when he released it, and the glow of Sidene had grown stronger, and he could not remember any more.
"Sidene." He felt cold. "Did I do something?"
He frowned, trying to remember.
"Did I say something?"
"You just sat there stiff as a statue," Loyal said, "mumbling to yourself no matter what anyone said. I couldn't make out what you were saying. Not until you shouted day loud enough to wake the dead and nearly put your horse over the edge. Are you ill? You're acting more and more oddly every day."
"I am not sick," Rand said harshly, then softened it. "I'm all right, Loyal."
Selene watched him warily. From the pit came the sound of men calling, the words indistinguishable.
"Lord Rand," Huron said, "I think those guards have finally noticed us. If they know I up this side, they could be here any minute."
"Yes," Selene said. "Let us leave here quickly."
Rand glanced at the excavation, then away again, quickly. The great crystal held nothing except reflected light from the evening sun, but he did not want to look at it. He could almost remember something about the sphere.
"I don't see any reason to wait for them. We didn't do anything. Let's find an inn."
He turned Red toward the village, and they soon left the pit and shouting guards behind. As many villages did, Tremoncine covered the top of a hill. But like the farms they had passed, this hill had been sculpted into terraces with stone retaining walls. Square stone houses sat on precise plots of land with exact gardens behind, along a few straight streets that crossed each other at right angles. The necessity of a curve to streets going around the hill seemed begrudged. Yet the people seemed open and friendly enough, pausing to nod to each other as they hurried about their last chores before nightfall. They were a short folk, none taller than Rand's shoulder, and few as tall as Huron, with dark eyes and pale, narrow faces, and dressed in dark clothes, except for a few who wore slashes of color across the chest. Smells of cooking, oddly spiced to Rand's nose, filled the air, though a handful of goodwives still hung over their doors to talk. The doors were split so the top could stand open while the bottom was closed. The people eyed the newcomers curiously, with no sign of hostility. A few stared a moment longer at Loyal and Ogier walking alongside a horse as big as a Duran stallion, but never more than a moment longer. The inn at the very top of the hill was stone like every other building in the town and plainly marked by a painted sign hanging over the wide doors. The Nine Rings. Rand swung down with a smile and tied Red to one of the hitching posts out front. The Nine Rings had been one of his favorite adventure stories when he was a boy. He supposed it still was. Celine still seemed uneasy when he helped her dismount.
"Are you all right?" he asked. "I didn't frighten you back there, did I?
Red would never fall over a cliff with me." He wondered what had really happened.
"You terrified me," she said in a tight voice, "and I do not frighten easily. You could have killed yourself, killed—"
She smoothed her dress.
"Ride with me, tonight, now. Bring the horn, and I will stay by your side forever. Think of it, me by your side, and the Horn of Valir in your hands. And that will only be the beginning, I promise. What more could you ask for?"
Rand shook his head.
"I can't, Celine. The horn—"
He looked around. A man looked out his window across the way, then twitched the curtains closed. Evening darkened the street, and there was no one else in sight now except Loyal and Huron.
"The horn is not mine. I told you that."
She turned her back on him, her white cloak walling him off as effectively as bricks.